We're skipping a chapter in the book now, so we're going to chapter 10 now, which is about carbohydrates. And keep in mind that carbohydrates can be either small molecules or large molecules, right? Building blocks or polymers. When we're dealing with sugars, which is another name for carbohydrates, really, we're going to find carbonyl groups in there. And so just remember what a carbonyl group is. Carbon double bonded to an oxygen, right? And keep in mind that a carbon double bonded to an oxygen involves a carbon that can be either not at the tip of a skeleton or at the tip of a skeleton, which is the fundamental difference between aldehydes and ketones, right? Remember I gave you the mnemonic about A is at the end of the alphabet, that's one tip, and K is not. So there are sugars that are aldehydes because the carbon involved in the carbonyl is at the very end of the carbon skeleton somewhere at one tip of a branch. Or there are sugars that are ketones because the carbon is not at a tip. Well, what is the suffix that we use to designate sugars? O's, O-S-E, right. And therefore, we can come up with words like ketos and aldos. And aldos is simply an aldehyde sugar, whereas a ketose is a ketone sugar. Okay? It's just one way of classifying sugars. There are various ways of classifying sugars. For instance, you can also classify them based on the number of carbons in that sugar. We're talking about monosaccharides now. Okay? So not polysaccharides, just the building blocks. Building blocks come in a huge variety themselves, actually. There's all kinds of different monosaccharides. But one fundamentally different way of categorizing monosaccharides, different from whether they're ketoses or aldoses, is based on how many carbons there are in a skeleton. So that's what gives us names like trioses, three-carbon sugars, pentoses, like we've talked about before, you know, deoxyribose and ribose are pentoses because they have five sugars, glucose is a hexose, and so on. In the second slide, we're just looking at some trioses, so these are really simple monosaccharides, trioses, because each of them has three carbons, but triose is not the name of an individual sugar because there are multiple possible trioses. Notice that dihydroxyacetone, which we'll talk about in pathways later on, is an example of a ketose because that carbonyl carbon is not at the end of the carbon skeleton. It's in the middle in this case. Whereas both of these other ones, D and L version of glyceraldehyde, are aldoses. That carbonyl carbon is terminal, in other words. Okay, let's go to three then and talk about isomers. Isomers, remember, share chemical formulae. For two things to be isomers of each other, they need to have exactly the same number of exactly the same types of atoms. But they're not the same exact compound because of how those atoms are arranged, right? Well, just saying isomer is pretty general when it comes to carbohydrates because there's many different subclasses of isomers, as you see here, simply because there's so many different ways of combining the atoms when it comes to carbohydrates. And it gets more and more, there becomes a ridiculously high number of possibilities the more carbons you get. So these are relatively simple examples, but each box here is a different class or category of isomers. So isomers is just a general, that's the main box here. Isomers can be either constitutional, which are sometimes called structural isomers, or stereoisomers. Notice that if you have a constitutional isomer, what really is different is the ordering of the atoms themselves with respect to the carbon skeleton. So they're fairly drastically different. You know, glyceraldehyde is obviously different from dihydroxyacetone. But if you count up all the carbons, oxygens, and hydrogens, it's the same number of each for both. So they are isomers. Okay? Stereoisomers, on the other hand, aren't really so much about a drastic rearrangement of the ordering of those atoms, but just where those atoms occur in space. They occur in the same order with respect to their connection to the carbon skeleton, but whether they hang off in one direction or the other matters for stereoisomers. Okay? So follow the lines here. Stereoisomers then branches into two different groups itself. There are two major subclasses of stereoisomers, enantiomers and diastereoisomers. Now, enantiomers, I've already mentioned in an earlier chapter, they are non-superimposable mirror images. So they are either right-handed or left-handed, just like your two hands are non-superimposable, right? They're mirror images of each other, which you can clearly see when molecules are represented this way. What are these representations called? Yeah, these are Fischer projections or Fischer diagrams. When you arrange them this way, which is really not how they occur, right? They're not really planar molecules. But when you depict them this way, it's really easy to see the mirror image of these. Right? On the other hand, and by the way, when you have enantiomers, of course, you're going to have a D version and an L version, dextro and levo, right and left, respectively. In diastereoisomers, which are still stereoisomers, of course, they are not mirror images of each other. At least, I mean, they're not completely mirror images of each other. So this happens more often when you add more and more carbons to the skeleton. Because to be a perfect mirror image, it has to be the same, you know, there has to be a flip at every position along that skeleton. Well, there doesn't have to be a flip at every carbon in that skeleton. If it's just a couple that are flipped, then it's not an enantiomer, it's a diastereoisomer. Okay? And then note, follow the lines again. Diastereoisomers come into subcategories. And those are epimers and anomers. For epimers, notice it says differ at one of several asymmetric carbon atoms. So there should be just one place, one chiral carbon, where the substituents are switched. And you see that that's true for D-glucose and D-mannose, right? The only place they differ is at carbon 2, where the hydroxyl and the hydrogen are flipped. But all the other carbons, it's the same in both of them. So that's an epimer. Anomers involve creation of a new chiral or asymmetric carbon when what is called the open chain form, which is what all these Fischer projections are, when the open chain form of a monosaccharide forms a ring or cyclizes, then you can have anomers. And in general, monosaccharides exist in equilibrium if they're by themselves, if they're not part of a polysaccharide. A monosaccharide can exist in either the open chain form, non-ringed, or the cyclic form with a ring. And they can go back and forth, but more often you're going to find the ringed form in any given population of monosaccharides. It's an equilibrium, though, so they go back and forth. When they do form the ring form, though, that creates a new carbon it's not a new carbon, but the carbon goes from being symmetric to asymmetric, and therefore there's going to be now two possible versions for it. And that's why D-glucose, which is a specific version of glucose, it's a specific diastereoisomer of glucose, that's not even specific enough. I mean, it differentiates it from L-glucose, right? But there's multiple forms of D-glucose because when you form a ring, you can put this hydroxyl above the plane or below the plane. And that's why you have to separate it into alpha D-glucose versus beta D-glucose. And that, even that's a subtle difference. Even though that's a subtle difference, that makes a big difference when you're forming polysaccharides. When you're forming a structural polysaccharide like starch versus, a storage polysaccharide like starch versus a structural polysaccharide like cellulose, you're making either one of those polysaccharides out of nothing but glucose, but very slightly different forms of glucose. So the isomers actually matter quite a bit. Okay, let's go to slide 4 and look at some more monosaccharides. Now notice these all happen to be right-handed versions, but they are different sugars. They have different names as well. Each one, though, we have a blue carbon that is part of the carbonyl group. Now, why is it listed as CHO? How is that possible? That's really just shorthand, right? It's not that a hydrogen is simultaneously bonded to a carbon and an oxygen, because hydrogen has a valence of 1, right? Listing it as CHO is just being lazy. Biochemists realize that that really represents, because of the way atoms have to work, a C double bonded to an O and an H, right? That carbonyl carbon is always considered number 1 in a monosaccharide, which is why it's the green number 1 is beside it in these ones that have a terminal carbonyl. And then you just go up from there. So these are pentoses that we're looking at, ribose and deoxyribose. Obviously, they have 5 carbons. But notice that in each sugar, there's a pink carbon. And what's special about the pink carbon compared to carbon number 5 on either of the top 2? It is chiral, yes. The pink carbon is chiral. It's not the only chiral carbon. What does it take to be a chiral carbon? Let's review this. What has to be true for a carbon for it to be chiral? It has to be bonded to 4 different things, right? And so that's true for multiple carbons here. But it's not true for carbon 5 of ribose or deoxyribose. Why do you see that just from this Fischer representation? There's 2 hydrogens. So that abbreviation, CH2OH, really means that the carbon is bonded to an OH, a hydrogen, another hydrogen, and then the rest of the molecule. Well, that's not 4 different things, right? That's 3 different things and another one of just like one of those 3. So it's not a chiral carbon. So that means that there is no asymmetry for that terminal one. The point here, though, is that the pink one is important for naming these things either D or L. Whatever the highest numbered carbon is that is chiral is the one that you're going to use in determining whether the isomer is right-handed or left-handed. Okay? So carbon 5, that one's not the terminal asymmetric carbon. Carbon 4 is, though. And all the other pink carbons on the bottom ones are carbon 5 out of 6 ones. These are all hexoses for the same reason. This is the highest numbered asymmetric carbon or chiral carbon. And notice that every one of these examples on the slide has attached to that a hydroxyl and a hydrogen, in addition to the other 2 things. But the hydroxyl is on the right side of that highest numbered chiral carbon. And that's what makes it the right-handed version of this isomer. These are all D versions, dextro. If everything else were the same, but it was just flipped to OH being on the left and H on the right, then it would be the L version. Okay. I have enough time for this slide at least. In slide 5, we are looking this is a general reaction. This wouldn't happen this wouldn't have to involve just a single monosaccharide going from linear or open chain form to cyclic form, but that's what actually happens. This general reaction is between an aldehyde and an alcohol, as you see. So why does this general formula make sense for an aldehyde? Because R means the rest of the carbon skeleton, right? This is the end because you don't have another R here. You just have a hydrogen. So this is an aldehyde. This carbonyl is at the end of the carbon skeleton. It's an aldehyde. An alcohol is an alcohol simply because it has a hydroxyl group, right? So it doesn't matter what this R prime is. It's R prime simply because it's a different skeleton compared to this R of the aldehyde, just to keep them separate. When an aldehyde and an alcohol react, you get what is called a hemiacetal, which is the structure shown on the right. So notice what happens is that the OR prime of the alcohol gets stuck onto the carbonyl carbon. Now that's not possible unless you eliminate the double bond of the carbonyl, right? Because valence of carbon has to still remain 4. But this general structure is hemiacetal, where R can be anything and R prime can be anything. Okay, so in general, when an aldehyde and an alcohol react, that's what's formed. Well, in an aldose, which is an aldehyde sugar, that single molecule is both an aldehyde and an alcohol, because sugars are alcohols as well, right? They have all those hydroxyls. That means you don't have to necessarily bring two different things together to form one of these hemiacetals. One sugar can wrap, the open chain can wrap back around on itself, and hydroxyl can interact with carbonyl to form a hemiacetal structure, and that's what causes the ringed or cyclic version of the monosaccharide. Let me just stop by saying, let me just stop. I thought that was a different slide next.